relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
If I were a betting person right now, I'd say Trump is going to run again. I mean, he seems to be setting himself up to do that. And if he's not held accountable, then he gets to do it again. I think that could be the end of our democracy. Not to be too, you know, pointed about it, but I want people to understand that this is a make or break point. If he were, or someone of his ilk, were once again to be elected president, and if especially he had a Congress that would do his bidding, you will not recognize our country.
Quite truly stunning. Hillary Clinton saying, if President Trump were re-elected, that would be the threat to American democracy like none other. Not, for example, her purchasing of Russian smear material used against the president's campaign to unleash the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA. No, not the deep sexing of 35,000 emails, many of them classified. No, none of that is a threat. The democratic process in our republic and the re-election of a president is the threat. I know somebody who thinks a little bit differently on that issue. Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka. And we are joined today, we are delighted, a good friend of America First, chair of the Republican National Lawyers Association and founder and CEO of the Center for American Liberty, Hami Dillon. Welcome back.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
I want everybody to have the chance because you've been on our show. You are a well-known personality on TV, but I want you to introduce yourself to our millions of listeners across the nation. But first, if I may, would you be so kind as to react to that little clip from Hillary's interview of last week?
Well, this American doesn't recognize America right now. So I'd say that the average American is the one that's under attack from the extreme left policies that Joe Biden is forcing down our throats and just the sheer incompetence. I think a lot of Americans right now, if they didn't vote for President Trump for re-election last year, they regret that and they wish they could have a do-over. And so, you know, when you listen carefully to Hillary, she's not just saying President Trump, she's saying Trump or some of his ilk. So what she's really saying is if you vote for a Republican, it'll be the end of the world. And I don't think that rhetoric is really helpful or particularly convincing.
Well, when you look at the election last year, you have been a staunch fighter for election integrity. Give us a little update from where you are in California. How have things improved or remained in stasis in the last 11 months since the inauguration and the election?
I'd say the only good news we have here in California is that we took back four seats in the House that we had lost in the midterm elections in 2018. And that was through, you know, the sheer hard work of, you know, people all over the nation really supporting us. But other than that, the quality of life has gone down significantly in California cities. People are fleeing California. Crime is way up. Quality of living is down. The cost of gas is $5 a gallon throughout the state and even higher in some places. And so overall, I think California is really a poster child for what could go wrong if the types of liberal policies that Nancy Pelosi, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Dianne Feinstein, and their ilk have forced on my city, San Francisco, and the whole state, if they're allowed to infect the whole country, you will all be living in the state of misery that we live in here in California.
Many have said it before that the way California goes, that way goes the rest of America. We'll talk about San Francisco later in the stunning statement by London Breed, the mayor of San Francisco. But first, for those who aren't familiar with your story, your background, will you tell us your background, family background, where you came from, and how you ended up being the founder and the CEO of the center and doing the work you do for the Republican Party and for election integrity?
Well, sure. Thanks for asking, Sebastian. I'm a immigrant to this country. My father came here with his whole family, my mom and my brother, in the early 1970s. During the Vietnam War, there was a shortage of physicians throughout the country, and America invited well-trained doctors from abroad. So started out in the Bronx, like so many American families, and, you know, my dad finished his medical residency there, and then we moved to the rural South, where there was a need for orthopedic surgeons like my dad, and I grew up in a rural community called Smithfield, North Carolina, in the heart of tobacco country. It was a, you know, yellow dog Democrat country at the time, and, you know, during the time that we lived there, when my parents became citizens, they registered as Republicans because the Republican Party was the party of freeing the slaves, of ending segregation, and of really economic opportunity for people like my parents. And so they're very proud Republicans. And, you know, when I was a young kid, my mom was a volunteer wearing her sari, her Indian dress, as a Republican poll watcher in the Deep South to make sure that Democrat property owners didn't vote for their uneducated sharecropper and other workers in the field. So that was kind of my background. We grew up when I was a kid during the gas shortages of the Jimmy Carter era and having to wait in line to fill your tank every other day and 90% marginal capital gains tax and stagflation. And we would talk about these issues around the dinner table. My dad, as a small business owner, would tell us why he was voting Republican, why he was voting for those policies to change. And so that's the background when I went to Dartmouth College at the age of 16, where I met friends there who were involved in the Dartmouth Review newspaper. My predecessors at Dartmouth Review had been Laura Ingraham and Dinesh D'Souza. So I got to be, as a teenager, influenced by some of the great conservative activists of our time. And, you know, I never looked back. So I've been a conservative activist since I was a teenager. Supported Jack Kemp for president in 1988 as my first political campaign I worked on. Worked at Heritage Foundation in Washington for a year. And then I decided instead of being a journalist, I'd like to actually affect the change in our country and be a lawyer. So now I'm nearing the end of my third decade as a lawyer. And throughout that time, I've been active in civil rights issues on behalf of people of faith in our country, all different faiths. On behalf of civil rights in our country, dating back to my opposition to the Patriot Act, which I think now a lot of Republicans 20 years later realize was really the first step into a police state and surveillance state that is incredibly disturbing that we are seeing deployed right now on the January 6th protesters and on simply supporters of President Trump. And a few years ago, I realized that, you know, just doing all of this work pro bono really limited it to being me who was doing it. So I founded the Center for American Liberty to help raise money from the public to fund litigation that existing conservative and liberal nonprofits were not doing. People were not supporting things like, you know, parents whose kids were being, you know, sort of brainwashed in the schools, people who are suffering from government tyranny. Most of the conservative nonprofits are focused on making the world safer for corporations, quite frankly. And, you know, the United States Constitution doesn't say we the multinational corporations. It says we the people. And so it's been an honor the last 3 years to raise those funds. And it happened right before COVID. And so during the last 3 years, you know, we started this nonprofit and then COVID hit. We weren't planning. We didn't know COVID was going to happen. But our nonprofit filed 17 lawsuits against governors throughout the United States to challenge overweening COVID restrictions, including but not limited to opening up the beaches of California, opening up the businesses, making sure that children were allowed to go to school, not through Zoom classes, but through real school where they could actually learn, and on and on. And three of those cases succeeded at the United States Supreme Court this year. So that's my public type of work that I do. But in a total parallel track, I've been a Republican lawyer activist in favor of electing Republicans to office throughout the United States, and I've been active as a volunteer and a professional lawyer in election-related matters. I became a member of the Republican National Committee, one of California's three representatives, 5 years ago. And in that capacity, I played a very active role in the 2016 election for President Trump, the 2020 election, and I filed dozens of lawsuits throughout the country over the years on different cases involving the right of access to the ballot of citizens, the right of Republican candidates to be allowed on the ballot, like President Trump in the 2020 election, like Larry Elder in our recall election recently. And I think it is so important. And so I would say for the next coming year, I was just having this conversation earlier today with some Republican lawyer friends of mine. This is an existential moment for the future of our country, and the Democrats view it as the same. They're pushing a narrative that Mark Elias and the tens of millions of dollars of slush fund that he has is necessary to stop Republicans from taking back the House and winning back the White House. And we have the opposite problem. We must take back the House and stop this disastrous government in 2022. We must take back and hold the Senate. And we must take back the White House in 2024, or America as we know it and as my parents brought me to as a small child in the early 1970s will cease to exist.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's why she is so needed and requested across the nation. You see her on TV almost every single day. Please follow her on Twitter at PNJABAN and support her organization, the Center for American Liberty. She is the chair for the Republican National Lawyers Association. We are talking one-on-one with Harmy Dillon here on America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump and member currently of the Defense Department's National Security Education Board. If you enjoy the content here, please check out our brand new community on Locals. Yes, just over a week old. Direct access to me, behind the scenes footage you won't get anywhere else. Go today. You won't regret it. Gorka.locals.com. That's Gorka.locals.com. Stay with us for more one-on-one with Harmy Dillon here on America First. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you live from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans across the country. Not just me, people like Yvonne from California. This is Yvonne's story. Both my husband and I are in our 70s and are so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom of being pain-free like Relief Factor. Just those words, pain-free, should be reason enough. Find out for yourself. Call 800-500-8384 or relieffactor.com to order your three-week quick starter pack. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning or evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Yvonne, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What are you waiting for? Call today. 800-500-8384. relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com.
You're listening to America First with Dr. G.
Welcome back to America First one-on-one with Harmy Dillon. Harmy, I want to talk about the fight against those who wish to criminalize people who politically disagree with them. But I have to ask, given the story that you shared with us, I love hearing these back stories of your family, your immigration here. They're registering, your parents registering as Republicans once they were naturalized, and your activities. What was it like for your parents as immigrants here choosing the Republican Party? How did the people around them react? And how was it for you as an avowed conservative in all places like Dartmouth?
Well, on your first question, my parents, you know, didn't know much about Americans' different communities. What they did know is that when we landed up in the Bronx, where my dad was finishing his medical residency in orthopedics, one of the fine institutions there, it was actually an institution that was managed and run by a lot of Orthodox Jews. So for me, growing up in the Bronx as a small child when I went to preschool, I thought everybody's dad wore, you know, something on their head and they had a beard. And, you know, my dad wears a turban and he has a beard. And so it was a bit of a culture shock to then begin second grade in rural North Carolina. And my parents didn't know what the Ku Klux Klan was, but the Ku Klux Klan was very much active in the rural South in the 1970s. And in fact, it was a civic organization listed on the Welcome to Smithfield, North Carolina sign on Highway 95, just like the church, just like the Methodist Church, the Baptist Church, the Lions Club, the Rotary Club, the Klan. was a, you know, open and proud civic organization there. They didn't know that, but we learned about it pretty fast. I mean, there were threatened cross burnings and cross burnings still in the South at that time. And, you know, my parents quickly got the picture that, you know, the people who were doing that were the Democrats. They weren't the Republicans. They learned, you know, somehow got introduced to Senator Jesse Helms, who was a Republican senator who actually cared a lot about religious liberties, which was an issue dear to my family's heart as a religious minority in India. We are part of the Sikh community. And so, you know, they became good friends with Senator Helms, held many fundraisers for him, and really were among the first Indian Americans in that I knew who actually got involved in politics and understood the importance of not just sort of phoning it in and letting the next generation worry about it, but if you care about your community, getting involved and doing what you can to change it. So I grew up in a North Carolina that changed from Democrat to Republican. And it was really pretty fascinating to have a front row seat and listen and talk to politicians as a kid about those issues. And that's the American dream, really, to, you know, come here with no money in your pocket, your kids and, you know, small kids, and send them to public schools. I went to public school pretty much throughout my my education before I went to college. And, you know, it was challenging. I would say we did experience racism. There would be some patients who came to the hospital who did not want my dad wearing a turban to treat them. They would have to go. He was the only orthopedic surgeon in the county. They would have to get back in the ambulance and go to the next county. You know, so I do sympathize when I hear stories of racism in our country. It has existed in recent history, and it does exist for some. And so we have to acknowledge that as Republicans. But we're really the ones who can be the solution to that, I think, by offering opportunity and equality. You never hear me or my family, you know, complaining about how that's a structural barrier to success. I feel like I've been successful in my career, and so has my family and my brother who wears a turban. And so, you know, our faith is actually what helps us be successful, not an impediment to that. And so, you know, those are my values from childhood: praying together every day, eating together as a family, talking about cultural issues and matters, limited amount of television. That was something that my mom thought was important as well. 1 hour.
Wise lady.
I blew my 1 hour on 60 Minutes on Sundays. You know, I was a nerd and I read a lot of books. And so when I see young kids today, it's all, you know, Instagram and TikTok, and it's not really very, frankly, educationally fulfilling, and that's why you get such low information voters. And so, you know, fast forward to Dartmouth, you know, even whatever the flaws were of the South, everybody was polite to your face and, you know, said sir and ma'am and had good manners. And I just remember moving into my dormitory at Dartmouth. There was one of the few all-girls dormitories then. I think those are now eliminated. But, you know, somebody let the door slam in my face in front of me. It was a guy. And I wrote a letter to the editor. I was 16. And I said, you know, this is, you Yankees have very bad manners. And the paper happened to be the Dartmouth Review. I did not realize it was not the mainstream paper of the college. It was the alternative paper of the college. They invited me to become a writer for the paper. And the rest is history. If I hadn't had that guy slam the door in my face, I might be a very different person today.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. Yeah. And now I understand your warrior spirit. I've always had the utmost respect for the Sikhs of India and their warrior ethos. That explains a lot. We're talking to Harmeet Dhillon. Harmeet, let me jump straight in here. You mentioned January 6th. We've got everything that's happening with the National Association of School Boards. Are we witnessing an attempt in the last 11 months to criminalize conservatism?
Oh, yes, and we've been seeing that for some time. I think we've been seeing it since before President Trump was elected. The seeds of the deep state conspiracy against not just him, but people who entered public service to support him in the White House has been really stunning and shocking to me and I think many other Americans. But it was actually relatively easy to convert people in the FBI to really betray their oath, to make up and forge documents, alter documents, lie to a secret court, and conspire against the White House. Now looking back, I see that rot must have been there for many years, but the average American doesn't interact with the FBI or the Department of Justice. What I saw as a lawyer who was member of the Republican National Committee and, you know, sort of dealing with the whole transition process as a volunteer and an observer, I saw how rapidly even the so-called conservatives in D.C. really sort of took over the process and placed their own people in there. So there really is, when you hear the term uniparty, even though there are Republicans staffing the DOJ or Democrats staffing the DOJ, I could tell you so many stories of conversations I had about people like Rod Rosenstein, who, you know, the sort of intellectual class of D.C. Republican lawyers would say, what a wonderful person he was, above reproach, beyond reproach, you know, et cetera, et cetera. James Comey, same thing. I think in retrospect, you don't hear a lot of that anymore. You don't hear a lot of defense of that because those people were completely wrong. What was needed was not just Donald Trump to come in from outside and clean things up, but everybody in the White House and everybody around him. So that was a failure of the transition, was to allow the usual suspects to populate the government. And we suffered from that throughout, and that ultimately may have led to the results in the election in 2020.
We're talking to Harmeet Dhillon, chair of the Republican National Lawyers Association and founder and CEO of the Center for American Liberty. If you enjoy our one-on-one interviews, you don't find these anywhere else, not in the drive time, not on national radio. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. Wherever you get podcasts, just put in my name, Sebastian Gorka. We even have an app. You can download the app, and all the radio shows, all the interviews are available there 24 hours a day. And then lastly, of course, we stream on video. We put up the best interviews and monologues on Rumble. It is the First Amendment alternative to the fascistic censorious YouTube. Just go to rumble.com/Seb Gorka. That's rumble.com/Seb Gorka. We'll be back with Harmeet after these messages. All of you out there know that MyPillow doesn't have giant box stores or any shopping channels. They've been instead targeted by cancel culture, but now they want to pass on big savings directly to you. Get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with my promo code. They also have queen-size pillows, regularly $79.98, now only $24.98 with promo code G-O-R-K-A, or king-size pillows, usually $89.98, now only $29.98 with my promo code. MyPillow is not just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to actual beds. Promo code G-O-R-K-A also works at mystore.com and frankspeech.com. Call today, 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code Gorka.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America first.
We are just a few days away from Christmas. I'd like to share with you some audio from a young boy called Joseph. He is a recipient of your largesse, your donations on the Angel Tree program. This is, of course, the initiative where children of those who have been incarcerated, kids, more than a million, who've lost their mother or father to the prison system, receive a Christmas gift, thanks to you, on behalf of their parent, a message of love from that parent and the gospel. Make a difference today. Shed some love and joy. Make them feel less vulnerable. 70% of these children will end up in prison themselves. Let's break that cycle. $25 is all it takes, but give as much as you can. $125 is five children. Go to my website, sebgorka.com, and click on the Angel Tree banner at the very top, or call the Prison Fellowship, Chuck Colson's amazing organization, on 888-206-2794. That's 888-206-2794, or just go to my website, sebgorka.com, and click on the Angel Tree banner at the top. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and the Angel Tree banner. We are talking to Harmeet Dhillon. She is I think we call her warrior princess lawyer. I think you got to have a slash in there somewhere. And she fights for the truth. We got to talk about last year's election. The big question at the beginning I ask as we set the stage, who dropped the ball? when President Trump in office says the idea of mailing out unbidden 80 million mail-in ballots is how you undermine an election. He was right. Who should have defended against that? Was it the GOP, the RNC? Should it have been the local legislatures? Is there a locus? Is there a focal point for responsibility in just how shoddily the last election was exploited?
Well, Sebastian, you know, as you're asking me to indict a lot of people with that question, and
I'm asking you where's the most important place to fix it.
I'd like to also have friends and a job after I leave.
Let's make it less pejorative. Where is the place where we fix it first?
So let me first start by saying not like who dropped the ball, but where was the die cast? And I think China cast the die of the results of the 2020 election with COVID. I believe, like many others believe, that, you know, this was not some sort of a freak accident. This was, you know, a virus that was intended for malevolent purposes that has, in fact, had malevolent results on our country and the world. And so that enabled Democrats to rapidly put into place their playbook, which they have wanted for years, the elements of what we call HR1, the, you know, Nancy Pelosi attempt to make America, California, that dates back. I mean, Chuck Schumer has been pushing that agenda ever since he's been in Congress. You know, so 20 years they've been trying to put this mail-in balloting, loosen up the restrictions and all of that, and they finally got a chance to do that, and so with disastrous results. And so I think that's how a foreign power takes over and corrupts our infrastructure here in America. But as to who, there are all kinds of complicated campaign finance reasons I could bore you with, but there's hard money and there's soft money. And the Republican National Committee has certain limitations as to what they can raise and how they can spend it and how they coordinate. Presidential campaigns can raise and spend a lot of money. And so I think, you know, a lot of money was raised. And I think some of that money was spent, some of it was not spent. But as important as how much you spend is who you spend it with and who are the lawyers you select to do that work. And so I would say that, like I said before, with respect to the people who staff the administration, those same people are also kind of the lawyers who were selected because they're the usual people who get the jobs, who get the big, you know, contracts from our NRCC, NRSC, RLC, RNC. These organizations, the alphabet soup organizations, hand out contracts to their friends, and those friends let us down in the 2020 election. So the lawyers were not the best, in my opinion. I'm sure President Trump, I know he shares that view. And they did not make not just the after-the-fact election. That's what all of us see, and that's what Democrats mock us for, the attempts to fix things after the fact. But the work needed to have been done starting years earlier. And Democrats did quietly do it years earlier. Mark Elias was quietly, with the help of tens of millions of dollars of dark money funding, quietly undermining our democracy in ways that Republicans never noticed. And Republican legislatures and Republican county elections officials in red states were very happy to take this, you know, mystery cash, like kids who are being handed a lollipop by a stranger.
Hundreds of millions worth.
Hundreds of millions of Zuckerbucks. I mean, Idaho, Utah, all, you know, like Georgia, certainly, even all over the country, people took this cash. Nobody knew what it was. It was poison. It was accompanied with contracts. Those contracts required election officials to basically turn over our elections to nonprofit activists. That was disastrous.
I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from just outside the insalubrious, fetid swamp that is Washington, D.C. Before it's banned online, watch the new amazing documentary, How the Left is Stealing Your Church. Discover how the ideology behind critical race theory and wokeness is being smuggled into your evangelical world. Stream it at salemnow.com or download the mobile app. Salem Now, the antidote for today's cancel culture. And we're back with political and legal warrior par excellence, Harmy Dillon, here on America First. We've been talking about politics. We've been talking about elections. But you mentioned how COVID, how the China virus was exploited. Let's stay specifically on this issue from the point of the Constitution and just our rights as individuals, devoid of whatever happened in the election. I am saddened as a fellow immigrant that a nation I believe was founded truly on rugged individualism, on, you know, a breed of individual who went out into the wilderness and settled, you know, dangerous parts of the West, that we've been cowed, that, you know, the odd story of a restaurant owner in California or a bar owner in New Jersey were the outliers. And Americans didn't say, no, you're not closing down my business. You're not making it impossible for my employees to feed themselves. Will you talk to us about how concerned you are, not just masks and mandates, but in general, at the level of ignorance or willingness to stand up for our civil rights under the conditions of COVID, Harmeet?
So I don't think I've had a good night's sleep since March of 2020, when I heard about shutdown starting. I think that it has been in crisis mode, and it's in crisis mode right now, I'll tell you that. For every American I'm able to help at my law firm and my nonprofit, there are literally 100 who ask me for help, and I don't have enough hours in the day to do it. It's been 18-hour days since beginning of COVID. And the reason that I am working so hard like a one-armed paper hanger is that there are very few conservative civil rights lawyers in the United States. Why? Well, when you get out of law school, you know, all your cronies at the Federalist Society, and I say that as the former president of the largest Federalist Society chapter in America, University of Virginia Law School, they all want to go into big law, make millions of dollars serving napalm and asbestos manufacturers and making the world safe for, you know, polluters, and not actually sort of changing America for the better through the courts. And the left is the opposite. The best of the brightest of the liberal elites, they go into nonprofits, they go into the government, they go into actually implementing their ideals. I'm just talking about them at cocktail parties, you know, once a month. And so we don't have that. I happen to love it as an American citizen and an immigrant. I love my country. And so throughout my entire career, I've always done civil rights work. And I'll tell you, it was very lonely opposing the Patriot Act in 2020.
I bet.
It was kind of very lonely at the beginning of COVID because a lot of conservative lawyers, you didn't hear a peep from all those intellectuals in D.C. and around the country. They quietly, with their big law jobs, went home. Someone was going to pay them anyway. They didn't really care how the janitor was going to get fed. They didn't really care how the nail salon lady was going to feed her children. It was okay for them, and so it was okay. But for me, you know, I was one of the few lawyers who was doing this work even before COVID, so I began to get the phone calls, and they were heartbreaking, and people were asking me legal advice. What if I do nails out of the back of my thing so I can feed my children? How am I going to feed my children? And, you know, can I do that? And things like that. And so we assembled a team of lawyers at my firm and outside, and we just began filing lawsuits against the governor based on what we believe were constitutional limitations on California's governor's emergency authority. We got a variety of judges, Sebastian, Republican and Democrat, okay? The Republican judges were no better than the Democrat judges.
Yeah.
To a man, and occasionally a woman, but mainly to a man, every single one of the first level of my COVID challenges was denied by the courts. And then we went to the Ninth Circuit, we went to other courts of appeals, and eventually we started winning these cases, but some of them had to go all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And I'll tell you in retrospect, and we're still fighting now, I'm representing the Daily Wire in challenging the governor's, the president's OSHA mandates, which are failing pretty badly, you know, at the box office, as Arnold Schwarzenegger would say. but what we found was that it was really only in the very narrow area of the rights of religious liberty that even our United States Supreme Court justices were willing to say, this is too much. The government cannot allow marijuana stores and big box retailers and the government itself to operate, but say that religion is not essential.
Can you tell us why that tiny sliver is the only thing that the conservatives on the Supreme Court stood up for? What is there an explanation, Hamid? Is it a lack of courage?
I mean, it's a very boring explanation that has to do with the evolution of the First Amendment jurisprudence on even religious liberty has been a second second-class citizen in First Amendment jurisprudence for ever since Justice Scalia, of all people, in an employment case, said that it was okay for the government to fire a Native American who had used peyote as part of his religious ritual dictated by his faith because it was a facially neutral rule. That's the Smith case. And so that dates back to when I was when I was in law school, like more than 30 years ago. And that case has really put religion in a second-class status. The other rights, what I'm telling Americans today, now that we have the vaccine issues and vaccine mandates, literally every day at least 100 people try to contact me and get me to help them. What I have to tell them is Republicans and Democrats, since way before COVID, have made the world safe for American corporations to fire you for whatever reason they want, including forcing you to take a drug that you don't want to take. So vaccination mandates have been legal under federal law and most state laws since way before COVID. And if you don't like that, you have to change that politically. The courts are not going to step in and legislate. So I think Americans, and that has to be at the congressional level for most Americans. For example, the EEOC says it's legal for employers to require vaccination well before COVID. So if we don't like that, we can change that when we get back to the White House, the Senate, and the House, and we have a president who is well advised and isn't just advised by a bunch of corporate shills who are feathering their resumes and then going back to big law afterwards. He needs lawyers who care, he or she needs lawyers who care about the future of this country and about we the people, not we the corporations. Now, I run a corporation. You work with a corporation. I appreciate that we need corporations. Corporations need liability protection. But it doesn't mean that corporations should be allowed to force us to put things into our bodies as a new condition of employment that we didn't sign up for in order for us to be able to feed our families. I think that's wrong.
You have opened so many. This is an incredible discussion. And we're back one-on-one with Hamid Dhillon. A lot of people think they have no role to play, whether it's in cleaning up election rolls, whether it's making sure the republic functions properly. How flawed is that thinking, that I'm just a regular person and I have no role to play, Hamid?
I have a few suggestions. Number one, don't sit on your butt and get all of your information from Twitter or from Fox or CNN or television. Get out there and talk to other human beings. Don't be scared. Get involved at the local level. That's how I ultimately became a member of the Republican National Committee, as I was fed up here in San Francisco. I lived here because of my job. I decided to volunteer for the Bush campaign in the early 2000s. And I got involved in the local county party. I helped register voters and convince them to become Republicans when they became United States citizens at the citizen swearing-in ceremonies. I helped walk precincts for candidates. I helped volunteer for political parties and all that. Get involved at whatever 1 hour a week, 10 hours a week, 40 hours a week that you can do in your role. One of the most destructive things for us, Sebastian, in the last election was that some Republicans believed the hype that their vote wasn't going to count. Yeah. And I don't know if the left fanned that. Certainly the right fanned it. And now today people are saying it. And I saw it in our recall election. Republican voter turnout was lower because of our own rhetoric. That's a shame. People should stop saying that. It's outrageous, and they should stop defeating our own efforts. I think that everybody can get involved at that local level and do something consistent with their time and energy and availability. Convince your neighbors. One more thing I would say is I think that we saw in the Glenn Youngkin campaign in Virginia recently how powerful the voice of American parents can be. That's not a political issue. Both Democrats and Republicans, normal people, care about their children. And the school boards have quietly been a place where the left goes to get the training to then run for other offices. So there are the most malevolent Democrat totalitarians in waiting who are running our American school boards. We can replace them very easily. It takes a few thousand dollars, a knock on some doors, and some friends to overthrow a school board. That should be the Republican goal and the conservative goal and the goal of even non-conservatives. Take over America's school boards as the first step. And I think that anybody can get involved in a local school board race. There are nonpartisan throughout the United States. And it's an easy way to take control at the local level. Show up and have your voice be counted. If you're too cynical to think that Republican versus Democrat is going to be any different, and I understand that, because when Republicans had the White House, the Senate, and the House in 2017, 2018, we did not move the needle like we should have.
Yeah.
You can still move the needle in your community and make sure that pernicious gender identity issues and Marxism does not come to your home and into your children's minds.
I enjoy all of our one-on-one discussions because for me, that's the format I enjoy the most in radio or video, podcast, whatever. But this has been unusually informative and stimulating to me. Check out our new community, gorka.locals.com. We are going to have her back because that went far too quickly. In the meantime, follow her on her Twitter feed. Follow her at PNJABAN. Although that's not where you must get all your information, as she said. And please support her organization, the Center for American Liberty. She is the chair of the Republican National Lawyers Association. God bless you. Keep doing what you do. I'm Sebastian Gorka. You've been listening to One-on-One. Wherever you are, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.